Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms, through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Welcome to our show. My name is Deborah Rose, and I'm your host on Circle Talk. Circle Talk is one of the shows featured on CSNP, Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. CSNP has a lineup of rotating shows throughout the month. Mondays feature Lunatic Mondays with host Laura Gonzalez, alternating weeks in English and Spanish. It can't be Tuesday without Circle Talk, and I continue to be the host for this fun show on the first and third Tuesdays of each month. Wednesdays features Nature Spirituality with none other than Selena Fox. Are you in the mood for magic? Then you'll want to tune in on Thursdays for Moon Magic with Jeanette and David Ewing. We have such a fun and informative lineup of shows, so I hope you try them all. At Samhain 2020, three new ministers were ordained in an ordination ceremony facilitated by Selena Fox, Circle Sanctuary Senior Minister, and other Circle Sanctuary ministers. It also had the distinction of being the first Circle Sanctuary Zoom ordination. On Circle Talk in December, we met and chatted with two of the three new ministers, Reverend Juliana Russell and Reverend Laura Gonzalez. Tonight, I am very excited to introduce the third new minister that was ordained at Samhain, Reverend Charlotte Baer. Reverend Char also has the distinction of being the first person through Circle Sanctuary's new chaplain program. We're going to hear about Char's spiritual journey, her connection to Circle Sanctuary, what called her to pagan ministry. We're going to talk about chaplaincy and what called her to pagan chaplaincy and her thoughts on her first Zoom ordination. But first, we're going to talk with Circle Sanctuary's co-founder and senior minister, Reverend Selena Fox. She's going to tell us all about Circle Sanctuary's chaplaincy program. Welcome, Selena.
It's wonderful to be here. Hello.
Hello.
Well, we've been doing various forms of chaplaincy since our earliest days. It was pretty much taking the form of going into hospitals as outside ministers and working with chaplains at various institutions back in the 1970s and 80s. As our need to develop a more robust minister training program came into being, we started exploring even more ways of connecting with the chaplaincy world. And the minister's training program, it has been developing over the past decade in wonderful ways. And so last year in 2020, it became apparent we needed, as part of our ministry training program, to really have the chaplaincy program be its own thing, connected with the training we're doing, but something specifically for those who feel called to professional chaplaincy and all that that entails. So I'm happy to report that after Kern, who has been serving as a hospital chaplain, joined us as a minister in 2015, he, along with myself and with Tiffany Andes, who did some VA chaplaincy training work for a time, we started birthing the chaplaincy program. And now it's expanded some more because we have Char, who's joined us, who has already been a chaplain, but now is a Circle Sanctuary chaplain, ordained by us and endorsed by us. And I'm so excited to be here as part of introducing Char. Recently, she attended COMIS Network, the Council on Ministry and Specialized Setting, was the original name of this National Chaplaincy Organization, bringing together not only chaplaincy endorsers and chaplains, but chaplaincy educators and certifiers. So we were at the meeting, and as a result of the meeting, Curran's going to continue on doing work with Comus, and he cast our vote this year, and we'll do next year, and Char has agreed to start working with me on endorsing. I'm part of the Association of Religious Endorsing Bodies, which is another organization that met this year, and so she will be accompanying me to the next meeting of AREB in April, and is going to start working with me on endorsing. And another positive thing to report is that I was elected to the leadership team for Comus. And it was so wonderful to have Char and Tiffany and Kern with me at this online meeting. And I am so thankful that Circle Sanctuary's chaplaincy work has started blossoming even further. So without further ado, I am so thankful to be here, to be part of the introduction of Reverend Char. And I'll turn it over to both of you, and will be with you in spirit as I sign off for now and go to another meeting. Many thanks.
Thank you, Selena.
Thank Blessing. You, and congratulations on your election, Selena. Congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
A great honor.
Many blessings.
Many blessings. Of course, with great honor comes a lot of work, but congratulations with that. Well, welcome, Shark. Congratulations.
Thank you. Happy
I'm
dance,
so
happy
excited.
Dance, happy dance.
Let me tell people just a little tiny bit about you. Your first career, you started out as a professional actress. You've been a broadcast journalist. You're a U.S. veteran. You were a combat TV journalist. You were in ministry for 21 years. And you have 10 years of healthcare chaplaincy. And now, da-da-da-da, you're a brand new Circle Sanctuary minister. You are so accomplished. Congratulations.
Well, it's just so great to be here, and it's such a fulfillment. Like I said at the ordination on Samhain, it's a really coming home, coming out and coming home marker in my life. That was my entire reason for pursuing ordination with Circle Sanctuary. And, you know, I've attended PantheaCon in San Jose for a lot of years before they stopped, and it was a fateful night there when Selena and I sat down for dinner, and we just had heart-to-heart talks about ministry and vision and chaplaincy and what they're doing. And, you know, I've really appreciated the fact that Circle Sanctuary, with the efforts of people aforementioned, is the only pagan and in many ways nature-based denomination or tradition that is like not under the umbrella of the Unitarians, but a standalone that is fully ordaining and credentialing people to work in professional chaplaincy. And that is so exciting. Yeah.
That is exciting. So tell us a little bit about your spiritual journey. Like, how did it begin for you? Did you grow up pagan?
Did. I grew up in I was in a foreign service family and a military family, and then we also had a lot of very eclectic spirituality. So I was, as we've come to know, a lot of American families would consider themselves interreligious, you know, around the Thanksgiving table. You've got quite a potpourri of folks. And I was always growing up under the umbrella of Unitarianism, Universalism. My parents were comfortable with that as a religious affiliation. But that kind of means you can explore whatever. My personal spirituality has always been deeply, deeply connected to nature. Starting with singing to the sea urchins, you know, in Honolulu, and growing up in Hawaii, seeing Pele. I did a one-woman play at one point about seeing Pele, glimpses of a goddess, who visited me at Kilauea, you know. So lots of nature mysticism, lots of connection to animals, lots of connection to the goddess without, you have to understand, because I'm 60 now, there was not a framework for even talking about the sacred feminine. Not until the 70s.
Right.
With people like our fearless leader who started publishing, and Starhawk, who's
right.
also been a mentor to me,
yeah.
and other people who started talking about this thing, you know. And which, so up until then, it was creator spirit, reverence for life, nature, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But church was a place where men in robes, you know, and I do mean people who identified solidly as men in robes, you know, led, and women weren't
mm-hmm.
in ministry visibly. And there was no pagan path that I knew of.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up that way, Unitarian, but I was, you know, always attending things. So like in college in the 70s in women's studies, I got very excited by Z Budapest, by Starhawk, by
mm-hmm.
going down the moon. I started getting very interested in my ancestral spirituality, like I know a lot of folks at Circle R. I'm early Breton. I'm early Celtic, you know, so the pre-Christian nature-based religion that was there, you know, highlighted mostly by druidry or druidism, and I
mm-hmm.
started really wanting to study that. I went to high school in Scotland, felt strong connection to the land and the sea and the kestrels and the sky and the elements, and started, you know, looking at pre-Christian indigenous nature traditions. And we've come an awful long way in the last several decades of people actually reconstructing these things responsibly, as well as creating more neo-pagan paths. So I kind of grew up at the same time a lot of, like, Wicca and Druidry grew
mm-hmm.
up. And then I got really involved with Michael Harner's Foundation for Shamanic Studies, which looks at foundational shamanism, you know, across all cultures. Had very clear psychic gifts and clairvoyance. So I really started working with animal totems and journey totems, and working with shamanism and shamanic journeying, you know, methodology. I had soul
mm-hmm.
retrieval experiences. So I don't want to go on, but again, as the traditions are kind of coming online as more, I don't want to say mainstream, but there's more of a
mm-hmm.
path, more of an organization
right.
you can turn to, more spiritual formation you can do. I was growing up.
Right.
That was not my first ordination, though. I've been in ministry, you pointed out, 22 years. And when I first decided to leave broadcast journalism, I really wanted to go be a military chaplain. This was in
mm-hmm.
the 80s. They were first
mm-hmm.
ordaining women, finally. Women had not
until
served
the
80s? Chaplains. Come
wow.
in as a captain, a woman chaplain, you're part of the senior tier team of a, you know, battalion or whatever the
mm-hmm.
size of unit is. It's large. And you're doing all of the psychosocial spiritual care and counseling for all of the fighting members of the unit, the staff, the commanders, and all their families. And I was really drawn to that. If I can just insert something, part of my own
yes.
inspiration to look at ministry was that I became very disenchanted with the television world as a career.
Mm-hmm.
And I had discovered in the process of interviewing a lot of people, acting stories, telling stories, that I loved counseling. I loved the power
mm-hmm.
of story. And in my own journey with healing from PTSD,
mm-hmm.
MST, I was given the usual VA sort of Band-Aid approach of, here's some cognitive behavioral therapy, here's 6 months worth of Prozac, you know, let us know if you feel
mm-hmm.
better, none of which appealed to me. And I sought
mm-hmm.
out spiritual direction with a Unitarian spiritual director, a woman, first time. And I was hooked. It was transformative for
mm-hmm.
me, and I thought, I really want to be able to help other people in the same way. So long story short, the United Methodist Church at that point effectively recruited me because they were excited about having entrepreneurial chaplains and Methodist chaplains more than the Unitarians did. And I got a full scholarship ride to go get a Master's of Divinity in Berkeley from them.
That's nice.
I was on the very left progressive edge of that, you know, and they were more progressive than they are now, actually. Went in, and of course, in seminary, which is graduate school for ministers, you know, had no plans for any of this, but met the love of my life, my husband, Andrew Bear, had a baby no one thought I could ever have. So when I graduated 3 years later, that was not the moment to deploy to Afghanistan or Iraq. and it just, you know, God has took me on a different plan and ended up doing a lot of community-based organizing and startup programs, all the while in the closet doing my shamanic work, my dream work, my Wiccan circles, and following the circle of the year and going to Pantheacon year after year after year and seeking teachers. And I looked, I asked Cog, Covenant of the Goddess, I asked all these different traditions, Obad, about will you ordain someone and endorse them so one can transfer credits from another tradition over to you and be have those credits stand alone and be recognized as legitimate in my profession? Are we able to do that? And Circle Sanctuary is the first one.
That is exciting.
Yeah, it really is.
And so your connection to Circle is you met Selena at Pantheacon. Is that where you met her?
Yeah, for 10 years, yeah. We talked, and I mean, you know, I live in California. That's up in Wisconsin. But as Circle has been growing up and expanding its reach.
Absolutely.
You know, it's becoming this big network. I speak about Circle now as almost being a denomination, you know, a denomination network of nature-based traditions, which is so cool. You got the mothership in Wisconsin, but you've got so much, so many wonderful ministers and members and people, you know, from all over now. Yeah.
Absolutely. We're all across the country, so it's really fun.
So I don't know.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, you go.
No, I was just saying that's really, really excited. But that must have been scary to let go and to kind of look at pagan ministry or in chaplaincy, because that's like a big unknown. There are very few earth-centered chaplains. Isn't that correct?
Well, yeah. So what may be helpful is, like, for ministry training, and that when I say a Master's of Divinity, I'm referring to what has become, like,
seminary,
the standard professional ministry degree for somebody who is seeking ordination, no matter what context they're going to work in.
Correct.
And that sort of introduces you to all the skills you need, you know, to be able to function anywhere as a professional, ethical minister. And there's always included in that, like, denominational studies that you have to do for, you know, a good year. And so the whole development of, like, pagan spiritual formation, what is a pagan curriculum for, you know, a member, for someone who's going to be a professional pagan-identified minister, that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And Circle is definitely, you know, developing all of that, which is a real leadership role. There are a few seminaries doing it, like Cherry Hill out here, you know, but that's an exciting work in progress. In answer to your question, chaplains are people who are ordained ministers, and they're working in secular institutions. So it means, you know, we fulfill our leadership responsibilities to our own faith community, the Circle, like the other Circle ministers, but we make our living working professionally in a secular institution.
Which is the difference between minister and chaplain.
And, you know, there's been a lot of fuzziness because a lot of faith communities have basically sent spiritual care volunteers and have called them chaplains. But chaplaincy, in America, the United States, it's, you know, the big credentialing organizations include like the Association of Professional Chaplains, Spiritual Care Association, College of Pastoral Supervision and Psychotherapy. These are some big ones. And then they're like Navy chaplains, you know, and they kind of oversee the professional standards for anyone who's going to work as a professional chaplain and be credentialed by them. So why this matters is that the profession of chaplain has really been growing up like in the last 50 years. And so more industries now are saying chaplains are staff members. They're not community volunteers, or they're not visiting clergy who are not staff chaplains. And that's not to be elitist or obnoxious. It's that you're held to so much more training and so much more regulation. They're concerned about liability issues and do you know how to
function in safety,
there?
Yes.
All of that, right. And so they've started to be far more boundaried around that than they used to be, so that a chaplain now, whether in the United States, you've got like federal chaplains, healthcare chaplains, academic chaplains, and new things developing. So federal is traditionally like you think of your active duty military chaplain. They work for the Department of Defense. Think about Department of Veteran Affairs. State prisons or federal prisons might have staff chaplains. Law enforcement or firefighting. You know, sometimes those units have chaplains.
I didn't even know that. I didn't know that they had units. You're mentioning a lot of things that I had forgotten or didn't realize had chaplains.
Yeah, and those people who do that have to not only be ordained and endorsed, and when a faith community endorses someone, they say, yes, we know that this person has the gifts and graces, the training, and the credentialing that's either in process or done to represent us in this industry, right? So that's important because there are a lot of little things you got to check off and a lot of preparation for that, whatever context you're going for. And then like healthcare chaplaincy, wow, this thing has really evolved because healthcare is exploding. You've got hospital chaplains, hospice, palliative care, which is in betweeny. You've got sometimes nursing homes, big nursing homes will have chaplains. HMOs, you know, will have chaplain staff. And those are constantly evolving. And basically, you're part of the medical team. You are part of the medical team. And this is kind of really exciting good news for people who are not Judeo-Christian. Because less and less now, healthcare employers are not hiring a chaplain from each kind of religion anymore part-time to deal with those patients. They're now hiring someone who's able to serve someone of all faiths, no faith, right? So this opens the door so much more for people who are pagan or nature-based or Muslim or Buddhist, you know, because traditionally it's been so Christian-Jewish dominant.
The big three,
and But if it's not about your faith when you're working with patients and families, it's about theirs, and you need to be multicultural, multilingual, interreligious in your knowledge base. You can hear there's a lot more training involved, but it's also opens the door, the employment door, so much better, which is exciting. And then you have academic chaplains, people who work as college campus ministers, maybe, and then, you know, that sort of thing. It goes on. So is that helpful to kind of have a little picture of what a chaplain is?
Absolutely. And I think that it's a field that is just going to grow stronger and more diverse as time goes on.
Well, and, you know, I was a hiring manager for a while. When I was in hospice, I helped to start a whole service line for veterans and families at end of life. And then I was a bereavement manager. And then I was a director of psychosocial and spiritual care. And when I was able to hire, I feel happy I've created jobs for other chaplains. And whenever I've hired, I like a diversity of people, not because every patient might see that, but because we then become a cadre of clergy who respect each other's multi-faith, multicultural diversity and keep each other honest about that. It's great.
That's really exciting. So what called you? I mean, you obviously are very accomplished. You had all this. What called you to enter Circle of Sanctuary?
It's what I said to begin with. This is about my authentic self. Now that there is a legitimate pathway, and as soon as Selena told me that, I called up the Association of Professional Chaplains. I called up Comus. I called up some of these. I said, are they recognized? Uh-huh. Are they an endorsing body? Are they legitimate? Because I was trying to find out, can they hold my credentials?
Good for you.
Yeah. And I wasn't going to go down a path with somebody if it wasn't doing that, right? And that just meant that now that there's a legitimate path that stands head-to-head with all those other denominations that have been doing it for decades, and we're legit, it's a chance to be honest about my spirituality, about who I am. I help other people do that every day. It's time for me to be able to do that myself.
That's so fun.
I'm grateful to the Methodists for,
starting you on your path.
Yeah, and Unitarians taught me a lot about all kinds of faiths, but this is home. I'm also pretty passionate about helping the pagan movement, too, because for me, nature-based religion is where it's at right now. It's where it's at.
Absolutely.
It's on the rise.
Absolutely. Well, what was it like? Because I know what it was like for me. Tell me, I mean, here you are, you're accomplished, you've been through seminary. What was your journey as a Circle Sanctuary minister student? What was it like? I loved it.
Yeah. Well, Michelle sent me the curriculum when I was first asking, and I was like, dang, that's pretty cool. I mean, this is some neat spiritual formation happening here. And then I went to PSG. I was just in tears because that's one of the requirements is you have to do a practicum there. I was in tears the whole time, and I was there alone, so I threw myself into everything, and I loved it, and I was impressed. I was impressed with the knowledge and really, you know, the professionalism of people and ethics. And I love the classes. We can always sit down any given year and tweak this or that because it's a work in progress always. But I just had beginner's mind. And even when you're someone like me who's transferring your credits, you may not be a chaplain in formation, but it's still learning all about Circle. It's still doing the spiritual formation that Circle Sanctuary offers and understanding it from their perspective that you're orienting to, you know? And so it was just great. It was fun. And Kern was my mentor, who was just a great companion buddy back and forth with me about this step, this step, that step. And, you know, I came with a big portfolio, so that's a little different than someone who might be in the very beginning of the ministry process. But it's just all wonderful.
So I was going to tell you, since I know that you work and you've been a chaplain a long time, what are some of the unique challenges that chaplains are facing now in times of COVID? I've noticed that with our staff, we, I work in healthcare. We necessarily don't have or did not have a chaplain, but all of a sudden they're starting to look at counseling and to looking, you know, things for staff who've been exposed to COVID, who've gotten COVID, who work with patients who have COVID and the isolation. And there's just a lot of new challenges this year for chaplains that I think that they have been. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, what a great question. Well, I'll speak to healthcare chaplaincy then, because that's the context you're referring to. It's the one I'm working in as well. We have my husband, Andrew, is a hospital chaplain. Kern is an inpatient hospital chaplain. And that's a different experience. And for me, I'm out in the community in outpatient palliative care. And why that matters is I'm seeing people in the clinics and in the infusion centers when they're getting chemotherapy or, you know, dialysis or immunotherapy. I see them, I don't see them in the hospital as much, but when they're discharged home on longer palliative care, and what that means for, in case someone doesn't understand, is that you're treating pain and symptoms. There's no cure for something, but you can live a long time
right.
with a pretty miserable disease, you know. Think
right.
ALS, think Parkinson's, think, you know,
right.
COPD and some of these cancers. So we then go to their homes, and I'm working with patients and their family members as well. And then you've got hospice, which is very, very end of life, that also is community-based
mm-hmm.
with patients and families. So when you ask the question, it depends on what context you're in. The inpatient chaplains I know are slammed with crises,
mm-hmm.
and they're going in and out of floors and wards. Nobody, aside from ICU or emergency or designated areas, is necessarily going in to see a COVID patient. But
mm-hmm.
if you're the chaplain who's called, you know, you may be sitting there with iPads trying to help people connect. You may have to put on full PPE,
right.
I mean, to go in and be at the bedside of someone who's really struggling, breathing and isolated, and their family members can't come into the hospital, and who do they call to work with the people outside? You know, it's
right.
just exhausting and excruciating all around. And the
mm-hmm.
folks who are having as tough a time as the patients are the totally exhausted staff, who are demoralized
mm-hmm.
at the public for not taking this seriously, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've known chaplains who've lost colleagues. All of a sudden, like I had in my clinic, two outbreaks all of a sudden, and we were all exposed and no one knew that. I know
mm-hmm.
Andrew's been exposed a couple times as well. That's devastating, you know.
It's just scary, right.
It's scary, you know, we're having to quarantine a home and wash everything. I mean, do everything. And I think some chaplains are asked to be involved with deaths and mortuary preparation and memorials for families. I've not been involved in that part, but that's more like what hospital chaplains might be asked to do.
Mm-hmm.
For me out in the community, not all my patients have COVID. But the extreme isolation of this year for people who are already
yeah.
severely compromised, huge mental health issues, psychosocial strain, huge caregiver burden on families, so many resources that we wanted to draw upon and to build a whole network of care are not available. You know, I'm listening to a lot of people suffering emotionally, spiritually,
mm-hmm.
Because they're so isolated and afraid and tired of all of this, on top of what they're already dealing with. And then their family members
mm-hmm.
are as well. So you'll see reports about increased domestic violence, children,
mm-hmm.
Animals, elders in the picture who need, you know, we see everything and we get involved with everything. My team consists of a social worker, a medical provider, and a clinical chaplain, me. And so we have to troubleshoot so much stuff that's just heightened
mm-hmm.
by the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's a little different than inpatient hospital. And again, staff, you know, we're dealing with infusion nurses, doctors who are exhausted, you know, we're asked
mm-hmm.
to do staff support a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So... But I think one of the biggest challenges that's interesting is having to try to do this high-touch work with people
mm-hmm.
that involves counseling. It involves ritual. It involves a very intimate kind of relationship. People share with their chaplain what they're not going to talk to their doctor about, you know.
Right.
And we're having to do it in telemedicine a lot of the time. Even if we're standing outside
the door
of the room.
I was just going to say, that's hard to get personal on a Zoom call.
You know,
yeah.
and I've been amazed with some support groups that I lead or some conferences I've been a part of or education or staff support at how intimate we've managed to get. But holy smoke, you know, it's not a telemedicine medium and you're constantly
right.
dealing with, you know, you get a view of someone's nostrils or they don't have connection or, you know, 10 different platforms or you get cut out. So it's been
mm-hmm.
it's been quite a workout in all of the empathetic communication skills that have to be in play before you start to do any work with someone. You have to have trust. And so how to do that over the screen or over the phone without being able to hold or to see or to cherish in person or to companion side by side, that's a challenge. That's tough. And chaplains everywhere have been doing it. You know, we've been doing it.
Absolutely.
Figuring it out.
And many of the chaplains that I personally know need self-care as much as any physician or nurse or any other community leaders. It takes a toll on you, although I'm hoping with the vaccines we see hope and we see light at the end of the tunnel. But I do think we've got a way to go in 2021 before we get to a more safe place. So, yes, I agree. And I think the social isolation has been what I've seen has been most dramatic, especially for people who have maybe borderline mental health issues or who struggle with social isolation generally. And this has just really amplified a lot of issues. So, I agree. I'm hoping that,
Well, and a lot of times it gives people a sense of the joy of life, the beauty of life, you know, the will to live. And it's not my agenda that someone have those. But if someone is fighting, like with populations I serve, someone is fighting really difficult physical challenges. You know, they've got physical wellness that the medical folks are working on, but they also have emotional, mental, spiritual, and psychosocial or relationship wellness. These are other kinds of wellness. And helping them to really retain or fortify those kinds of wellness to help them cope with what's going on physically, that's so important. And for so many people, a sense of meaning, a sense of connection is a big part of that. And when you're stuck at home and you don't have any sense of connection to, you know, even being able to go out to the store or a walk or see your friends or your family, you know.
Your grandkids can't come over. Absolutely. It makes a big difference.
Yeah, so we get real creative helping people stay connected. And then the whole thing about doing pagan ritual, I lift that up because I did a podcast with you last year about creating, you know, casting spells at the bedside.
Absolutely.
Ritual is so wonderful in getting past the words and helping people to really touch base with their authentic feelings and to express them constructively. You know, I got really good over the holidays at figuring out how do I do rituals over, you know, WebEx.
Right.
Or coaching families on how to walk through a ritual with me, you know, as a, like, I'll stand in the east or I'll be a over here doing this kind of sacrament, you know, and do as I do.
Really interesting. It is funny. I've seen some really, really effective good rituals. And I've seen some that weren't as effective. And I learned, again, myself, because I also work with a public group, and we're going to raise you a Zoom ritual. I've learned just by observing that you have to change. You can't just do a normal ritual on Zoom. It's not going to have the same impact. So you really have to think outside the box, and you really – have to change things. So, it's a whole different level of expertise.
Well, and I think you just nailed it, change.
Yes.
And I think 2020 has, for every chaplain that's working out there, this has been the year for which all your training mattered.
Absolutely.
You had to do where you kind of went, gee, really, all this? You know, I'm not using all this every day. Well, we used it this year, and going forward, we are. And it's all about adaptation, skillful adaptation in a way that is going to promote health, healing, wellness for, you know, your clients, for the people you're working with. And it's been relentless, right? I know you know this. There hasn't been one moment where we could drop down and just go, oh, okay, let's just
take
touch
a break.
Base about
There's
that.
No break. Yeah.
What did we learn? It's like, no, just go, adapt. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Oh, gosh, don't tell me that. I'm just curious. Have you had any pushback, or have you been welcomed from other faith tradition chaplains? Because I would think earth-centered and pagan chaplaincy would be a new concept for a lot of people.
Yeah, well, and Selena and I have talked about that. You know, I had an issue with Covenant of the Goddess when they said, well, anyone who's ordained with us has to be willing to go out and publicly declare I'm a witch. And I thought, well, okay, I am a descendant of Rebecca Nurse. That's legit, you know. But I thought, in my context, I would not be able to come in and just say to any patient, yeah, no,
right.
I'm a witch. You know, I mean, that's
right.
Because all of a sudden that becomes about me. That's off-putting.
Right.
And so I flip that back to, well, tell me what your spirituality. Oh, I see you've got a strong nature connection. Wow, I really resonate with that. You know, where it's about them. So the narrative is about them. But to your question, yeah, I get some pushback. What the pushback, and I'm newly ordained, so I will be experiencing this going forward, right? Newly ordained with CS.
Mm-hmm.
The pushback that I get is from people who've known me ordained in something else, who just can't for the life of themselves imagine why I would change. And I say, this is my authentic connection to the earth and to nature, and you know me from all my years of climate justice. You know me that way.
Right.
And furthermore, this is where I feel most at home and where I want to serve from. This is my center. People don't tend to say much after that.
Yeah.
Except they might say, well, for me,
it's
all about
real.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't get it. But yeah, so I don't grandstand. I just speak honestly from my heart. And I tell them, too, that I'm really excited about the rise of nature-based religions in this century, because Joseph Campbell saw it right when he said, in the 21st century, any religion that doesn't deal with the plight of the planet is going to be irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
I feel very, and something, Deborah, that's actually really funny too, is I'm working now in a geographic area. I'm on the Central Coast in Santa Cruz County, which is traditionally the Owaswans and Amamutsan territories here. It sits between Silicon Valley and the Central Coast. Over 54% of my patients happen to be nature-based. They may identify as, I'm Thor's Hammer Norse up in the hills. I might be white supremacist or not. You're like, I've had a couple of self-avowed Wiccans. But mostly it's not. Usually it's, well, I don't consider myself religious, but I'm very spiritual. And yet when we start to tease out what are those authentic connections with something or someone beyond yourself that give you inspiration, that give you hope, that give you strength, it's nature. Or
right.
It might be someone slipping in the sacred feminine. It's almost as if someone who's been closeted, you know, lesbian, all of their life is now admitting to the chaplain that, yeah, this is really who I am. And I get to witness that, to go, well, welcome home. I get that. And it's incredibly healing.
Well, we've talked a little bit about, you know, COVID's causing social isolation, and we're having not to be able to connect in person. We're using other technology. Like Skype and Zoom, you were part of Circle Sanctuary's first Zoom ordination.
Well, I know. Yeah.
Tell me about that, because I was very fortunate enough to be able to witness your ordination. and I was part of it, and I was overwhelmed. I didn't know what to expect, and I want to hear from you. I was overwhelmed about how sacred it was on a Zoom ceremony. So tell me what your thoughts about it were.
Right? That's what I mean about we've had these startlingly, that's a word, I guess, startlingly intimate moments over Zoom.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, I was so touched by how sincere and how personal it was.
I was too.
Yes,
it would be
lovely. It would be lovely to have everyone surrounding you, and I would have been verklempt and, you know, choked up and all that stuff. But it was really, really touching to see people's faces up close. I didn't see all the comments streaming. I didn't get all that.
Mm-hmm.
But by comparison, my former ordination was like in a big convention hall with lots of poobah and, you know, speeches and everything. And then those of us who were being ordained marched up onto a stage and got a certificate. It felt more like a graduation. This was so personal.
Right. It was lovely. Yeah, Selena is such a master at ritual and ceremony anyway. And I've learned so much from her, and it's funny, I watched the different things in place, like, you know, we all lit candles, and we all, even though we were hundreds and hundreds of miles from each other, the simple act of doing things together really made it personal very, very quickly. Yes, and that we shared words, and it made me tear up. It was a wonderful ceremony. So I was very fortunate to be able to witness your all's ordination, and it was very sacred.
Yeah. I felt that. I think there's going to be a desire to retain some of the Zoom ministry contact. I think a lot of us who've been connecting with each other, beyond geographical location, are going to want to continue to do that. Michael has really, I mean, I tease Selena, she's become a YouTube channel. You know, she. But I mean,
absolutely.
And
they do now.
Reverend
Circle
Laura
actually does
and
have
yourself.
A YouTube channel.
And I think a lot of us are going to want to have the live experiences and continue the connection over the cyber experiences as well. And that's fine by me. I think some of these techniques in chaplaincy are going to continue because they make sense. They just make sense.
It's funny you say that because my partner and I, we go to probably two or three pagan events, festivals a year. And typically they're geographical, within a 500-mile radius. They're geographical. Well, this year, obviously places could not hold in-person gatherings, and so they had festivals online with Zoom. So I got exposure and got to attend, you know, lectures and Zoom for an event that there's no way geographically that I could have gotten to or been able to afford to go to. So I look for in the future that you're going to have a combination. It did not replace that in-person connection and networking and meeting people, but I do think there's a big component, and I think that you're going to see going forward you're going to have a combination of both, because, again, I have went to as many as I could find. I just got exposed to a lot of different venues that I would not have normally even considered in the past because I couldn't afford to travel there. So I think I think this in some ways changed us.
Well, I think, you know, it's kind of like, what's the purpose of the event? Is it about that one-on-one interpersonal connection and the dynamic of being community and community building together? Well, that's best served live, of course. But there are a lot of things we do in ministry, education stuff, rounding up.
Right.
I mean, in chaplaincy, the professional organizations are going more and more to online conferences because people with limited continuing education funds can do it. They can do it online. They can get all of that, you know, and envisioning how to continue to fortify Circle's chaplaincy program. Some of the commitments I was making back were things like looking at once someone is ordained, you know, what kind of education and preparation for your endorsement can we continue to offer? That can be online. You can have a mentor online with someone guiding you through the professional process of getting, you know, all your port stuff ready. And are you done with your MDiv yet? Are you going to do that? Are you going to CPE? Or what trainings do you need to go forward? You know, that mentoring can be done. We can provide pastoral supervision across the country to each other on Zoom. We can have support group roundups with other Circle chaplains, checking in on how you're doing and providing advocacy, and we can even broker continuing education with each other. None of that has to be done live. It can all be done by Zoom to reach across the country to support each other. But it doesn't replace going to PSG every year and having the
absolutely living in a magical village, which I tell everybody, save your pennies. There is nothing that duplicates that experience as living in a magical village for a week. It's just, I've been to 14 PSGs. So, that is very, very exciting. But I do think going forward that I think the horse has gotten out of the barn, and I don't think it's going to go back in. I think that there will be a place for a lot more interaction online for people and connection.
It's a challenge and an opportunity for, you know, Circle Sanctuary, because we are a growing, I'm going to call it faith community, because it's not just a little local church anymore. It's not a little local grove or a property. It is a national network. It's an extended faith community. And I think Circle Sanctuary is positioning itself to be a real leader in all things nature-based religion. That's so exciting.
I do too.
To see that kind of expertise and passion. You know, it's exciting.
It is exciting with all the political changes that are coming up. And
And I think, you know, in representing Circle Sanctuary in some of these heavy-duty industries where they've not been used to seeing pagans before, is they see you as a professional. They see you as a professional with the same level of training and credentialing and leadership and performance reviews and legitimacy as any other faith tradition out there. And that's been a challenge for nature-based religions, because people view them as, well, they're great, but they're over there in the woods somewhere. You know, they're not here in the heart of whatever. You know, they're not here in the field with us working as professionals. And sure you are. Yeah, We're right here. We're not crazy.
And
we're good.
Absolutely. And you laugh about that, but I'm very aware, and which is why I'm so appreciative of the work that you and Selena and Kern, what you do, now some people wouldn't like this, but basically what you do is you normalize earth-based spiritualities. So in that helps me too. Do you know what I mean? The more normalized you make it, then the more opportunities in other fields that just open up as time unfolds.
Well, I think we're in a really, really interesting time. A lot of challenges, but so much opportunity for growth. And I just, I know Circle Sanctuary feels this way, but I am glad to be part of Pagan Pride to say, you know, it is time to reclaim this ancient wisdom. It is time to cast it forward, bring it into the 21st century where, you know, in the eco-chaplaincy work I do, the healthcare chaplaincy work I do, you know, this stuff matters. It matters. We have a methodology. We have a worldview. We have beliefs and values to share with others that are healing and productive and wonderful. So come play with us.
Well, again, I want to tell you congratulations I'm so excited to welcome you into the Circle of Sanctuary Ministry family. So
thank you, and I'm very grateful.
I adore you and consider you a friend, and I'm just so excited to see where your ministry will go next.
Can I say one more quick thing? I want to shout out.
You can say
I
all you want.
Michelle.
Go ahead.
I mentioned Michelle before, too. We've talked about Selena. I mentioned Kern. But I want a big shout out to River and also to Eldridge for the amazing amount of time and dedication and care and skill that they offer in guiding the whole ministry and training program. As a chaplain going through, I did I doubled up the classes. So I did the fast track in 1 year. And, you know, they have just been and continue to be so dedicated. Circle's really lucky to have their efforts. So I just wanted to shout out to that.
Absolutely. Thank you for doing that, because I can't shout out enough to them. I have them on there, usually my yearly guest, and they talk about the program. And, yeah, it's just it's the dedication and work they do, and they both have full-time jobs, so it's a real dedication, a love for paganism and for students if they do it. And yes, it's we are so lucky. We have so many talented ministers at Circle Sanctuary. I'm just excited to see what the future holds.
Yes, and you're one of them. So thank you for all these podcasts you do. That's great.
Thank you so much. And again,
okay,
from all of us here at Circle Talk, congratulations.
Thank you. Blessed
besides
be.
Besides our ministers, I'd like to thank, besides Selena and Shara, I'd like to thank David, our sound engineer, for his technical expertise. And finally, I'd like to thank all of you out there, our listeners, for your continued support of all of our shows here on Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast, or CSNP. Our next Circle Talk will be Tuesday, February 2nd, and we'll be talking with Mayor Cronwell, author and co-creator of 1,000 Goddesses Gathering. I look forward to being with you all again, so please come back. We'll now transition our show with a musical selection. Good night, everyone, and blessed be.
Good night.
One spirit in the dark, like a candle wavers. Many spirits joined as one, burn with the power of the blazing sun. There is strength in community, like a cat. a circle empowering you and me. The circle binds yet sets us free. In the Goddess name, so mote it be.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.